Welcome everyone to episode 28 of the Business of Sport. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli. I am your host, and my co-host, Mr. Rob Yao, as always, joins me every single week. Rob, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing, my friend?
Absolutely fantastic. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, number one, happy 4th of July, America. We look forward to this banger of an episode on this very, very special day in this great country. Our very special guest is Mr. Paul O'Brien, the commercial director of Watford FC. Paul, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, really well, thank you. Really well. We've got a season that starts a month tomorrow, so all systems go here, actually. It feels like the summer's just come and gone already.
Well, I could just imagine. Paul, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the world of sports business, tell us a bit about yourself and your backstory.
Okay, so I've been commercial director here for 8 years. I was a big Watford fan before I got the job. Well, I guess I still am now. But I was a season ticket holder before I came here. I'd worked in rugby. Before I'd worked at a sponsorship agency, and I'd worked for a brand before that, started off in sales and into marketing and into sponsorship. I suppose it was where working at a sponsorship agency, I really found my feet in the sports sector, worked for a couple of rugby clubs. And then I was driving home one day, very happy with my job, got a call from a recruiter. Told him, he said it was a football club. My name had been mentioned. I said I wasn't interested. And he said, right at the end, he said, would it change if it was Watford? And I said, yes, it would. And that was that then I went from being really happy at my job to really desperate for this job in about 2 minutes. So, it doesn't feel like long ago, but 8 years. A lot of ups and downs, some great times ahead, but it's great times in the past, and hopefully some great times ahead. But I suppose being a fan works both ways. When a going's good, it's fantastic, and you're part of the club, and you're part of everything that goes on. When it's bad, and we've had a couple of relegations in this, I think it hurts more actually, because you're looking at it from a fan and for someone who works here, and you're desperate to make a difference. And that's what the pressure here comes from, putting myself under pressure of looking myself in the mirror every day to make sure, have I done the best job I possibly can for this football club? So that answers your, that's a long answer to your question.
That's a great answer. You mentioned relegation. We're going to keep start there. I mean, probably a sour note to start on, but I mean, yes. We talk about every week the business of sport, and we go into depth about how clubs are operating around the world, what moves they're making, what deals they're working on, so on and so on. We've never had an opportunity to sort of sit with someone like yourself and ask them the questions that the fans really want an answer about, because nobody really knows what happens and the impact that relegation has on a football club, other than those that actually work behind the scenes and see what impact it has. So we'll start. What would you say are the major challenges that a team that was just playing in the biggest league in the world, at like the pinnacle of football, all of a sudden drops down to the championship? What would you say are your greatest challenges as soon as that happens? You know, that summer. Well,
yeah.
Take us for it. You've just been relegated. The summer hits, and it's like, wow.
Okay, so on a crass way, it's around £17 million worth of partnership revenue down to £3.5 million. That's how we've done it. So it's phenomenal from there. I'll take you back to 2020. We had a phenomenal team. When you look back now, how we got relegated to that team, it was. Beyond what anyone thought in the summer beforehand. And we got relegated on the last game of the season. We the week before COVID hit, we beat Liverpool. Liverpool were unbeaten all season. They were just about to win the league. We beat them 3-0 at Vicarage Road. We moved out of a relegation zone. And then a week later, we're all in lockdown. When Operation Restart came, or Project Restart, it was called, we were outside a relegation zone. We fell back in about 5 days before the end of the season. We had 3 games in a week, and we lost 2 and we fell into relegation. And that was really the first time it hit me that I'd always planned for it and thought, well, what happens if we got relegated? But that was the first time it really hit me, was going, thinking, this is going to happen. Our last 2 games of the season that year was Man City and Arsenal. Arsenal away, in with no crowd. And if you've ever been to Vicarage Road, the fans do give you a lift. It's a very tight stadium, and it's very it can be a very noisy stadium as well. So that year, we started looking into the difference between the Premier League and the EFL. And the central deals in the Premier League, you give away around 4.5 minutes of LED, of advertising on the boards, about 4.5 minutes a game. In the Championship and in the EFL, due to the situation we're in with having a betting partner on the front of the shirt, and you have to match minutes with the EFL's betting partner, you end up giving 25 minutes away, maybe a little bit more at times. So I guess on granular level like that, you're coming down on the central deals massively on money, but you're going up on assets. And that took me a long while to get my head around. And actually, all of the clubs who have got relegated this season, I've reached out to all of them, said, look, if you need any support here, because it takes a while to get your head around it. It's it is different. It's so different. But I guess the biggest difference, and I was speaking to someone who got promoted recently, and I told him this would happen, and he's phoned me and said, we're not kidding. I guess, and Rob will know this more, is when you're in the Premier League, your phone rings. People ring you. People want to chat to you. People want to offer you deals. And you have agents calling you, sponsorship agencies calling you all the time. In the EFL, it just doesn't ring. Like, it's like I've changed my number in the last 6 months or last 18 months. You just don't people. Apart from... Rob has always been brilliant. I think we first met Rob when we were in the Championship. And you and Thomas from Rhino Sports Marketing, you've always been very, very kind with your time for a Championship club, but not many people have. And for a Premier League, you've got agencies knowing they're on a cut of a very big deal, and you just don't get that in the Championship. So I guess your phone doesn't ring as much. You don't feel as loved when you're in this league, but... I'm not making it all about me.
Yeah, and Paul, it's one of those things, and you know, we've had some conversations throughout the course of this podcast, and certainly, you know, just throughout the year of watching, the business of soccer, whether it's here in the U.S., whether it's in Europe, around the world, And certainly the promotion relegation conversation is a very hot one over here, because our domestic league doesn't recognize it. And watching the stories of a Luton Town, watching their story, going into the Premier League, even following the Wrexham story from National League into the ELF. And then personally, the relationship you and I have of working with Watford and, working with you guys as you got promoted up, and then working with you guys as you come down and sharing some of those conversations of what that means to kit value and sponsor value, and all of a sudden you now lose a sleeve partner, but you can work on the back, and if you go up, just all of the various intricacies that you as a commercial director have to face. I know one of the questions that I had really kind of what is moving forward. And I think, you answered one of them, is, your relationship with your colleagues. And I think that's one of the things that, those, you're pretty close with Premier League, you know, commercial directors, and obviously, you know, those that are in the championship. How often are you speaking with, you know, with them on a day-to-day basis as you're fighting this challenge? I mean, you've got a betting kit partner on the front of your kit today. We've covered some of, you know, the recent news of the EPL making a decision to move away from that eventually. When they will actually do that, we'll see. But planning for things like that, I mean, as you talk to other commercial directors, looking at, you know, other categories, we're watching ownership changes directly affect Newcastle's ownership, now bringing in Middle Eastern companies that otherwise probably wouldn't be spending a lot of money in the space. You know, what's the conversation amongst your colleagues when you're watching these trends, especially, you know, in the UK, because it's you know, certainly one of the more dominant leagues around the world. I'm curious as the conversation, because I know as a sponsor rep, and an agent, and, you know, there's a lot of conversations I have with my colleagues following trends. I'm curious, you know, for those of you sitting in the seat, what are some of those conversations, you know, amongst your colleagues? And you don't have to name names, but like you said, you've reached out as you know, to share your experience of promotion and relegation as a commercial director dealing with it. But I'm just curious, as when you're talking about the sponsorship trends, you know, in general, around the, you know, global sport, I'm just curious some of the, you know, kind of that dialogue that you have with your peers.
Yeah, I'd like to think I have a very, very close relationship with a lot of EFL and Premier League clubs. It's a really weird one at the minute, because you rightly mentioned that in the Premier League you can have a sleeve, and in the Championship you can have back a shirt. What they've done only recently, EFL, as part of the Skybet renewal, is now given back one of the sleeves to us, so we can now sell it. The problem is, and this is, again, this answers possibly a different question, which you might throw my way about strategy, but we don't join into that race to the bottom. So what I'm doing at the minute, I'm speaking to a lot of other clubs to say, look, where are you pitching this sleeve at? Because we're getting some crazy offers coming in, some really, really appalling offers. And I had one last week, and the agent said, look, if you don't accept this, I've got five clubs who will. I said, good luck. Go and beat them up all against each other. I'm not joining into this race to the bottom. So on the sleeve, we're going to wait, let it bottom out on there, and then come out on the attack with it. Because I'm not, to sell something on your kit, on your jersey, it has to move a needle. Like, to do a poor deal and actually have it on your kit, it has to move a needle significantly. And that's where, so I've been talking to a lot of our agent, a lot of our my peers at other clubs about that, and how much they're selling it for, and what they're giving as well. Because we've all been giving it back reasonably late, we have committed to a lot of our more traditional media, like our LED space and our interview backdrop. And sorry, LED is the advertising boards around the pitch. So yeah, we do talk a lot. I think when it comes to trends, that seems to have died down more. Tokens was coming around, especially when Web3 started really picking up, and the thought of a metaverse, people started to do some deals there, and there was a lot of us sense checking against each other, like, what does this mean? And I always feel, and the older I get, I'm starting to realize my gut feeling is normally not far off. And if something doesn't smell right to start with, I've now started to learn by mistakes, to be fair, to trust my gut. And actually, my gut feeling's not normally that far away. And that was tested a lot in the Web3 first boom, I guess we say, and the fan tokens and things like that. So yeah, we used to talk a lot about that. And then lastly, we've been offered, and you know what it's like, Rob, what seems too good to be true with a brand at the minute, who are looking to invest a lot of money into this club. and into other clubs as well, two or three other clubs. And they told us for clubs, and I've spoken to all of the clubs now to say, listen, what am I missing here? Why does this seem too good to be true? Because again, this contradicts what I'm just saying about trust in my gut, but it's not often you have people falling over ready to pay you a lot of money and not many assets in return as well. So to answer your question, long-winded, I apologize, but yes, we do talk regularly. And it's that whole thing of together stronger, really, is if we work together, we will be in a stronger position.
Good.
Fantastic. You mentioned there earlier a bit about some of the strategies that you sort of let other clubs bottom out and do what they have to do, then you stick around and, you know, and wait for your time, as they say. What are some of the strategies you've implemented in the past to, you know, to rebuild your commercial relationships and attract new sponsors after your relocation? Because as you mentioned earlier, you said it's very different. Your phone all of a sudden stops. People stop calling you. So that means that now you have to work harder. Is there anything that you can share with us to, you know, so others can benefit from?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, hopefully this will never happen again because it was unique for all of us. But on that first week of COVID, some clubs were not allowed to talk to their partners because there was a whole thing about what we're going to do with these rights, which people have paid a lot of money for. The season looked like it was going to get curtailed, so the season was going to finish, which, as much as we were against it as a club, actually, it would have kept us up because we ended up getting relegated. But we as a club and me personally believed in the sport, which needs to go on, and the fairness of the sport and the spirit of competition needs to go on. I remember that first week of COVID well, that we got all of our sponsors onto one call. And if you remember, well, maybe it wasn't for you guys, Zoom and Teams, they're reasonably new there. I'd never had a call with 30 people on before for that week. So we got everyone on, and I went and I'd rehearsed this big, big monologue of how, look, we're asking you to support us. And about two sentences in, our then front of shirt Sportsbet, who were we've been so lucky to work with some great sponsors, and they were great people, really great, great people. And the owner, Tim, just sort of cut me off and he said, guys, we're all in this together. We're all in this situation. You don't need to stand there. We're not going to make things hard for you. We're in this together. And I don't believe that one person on the call will make it hard for you. And I know there were people on that call ready to make things hard for me. But after Tim said that, then everyone was like, oh, no, you know what? No, actually, yeah, you're right. We are all in this together. So I think the open attitude and being transparent with people, I do think absolute plays dividends when your back's up against a wall. And it's the same with relegation. We've been relegated twice, and some of our partners of American Airlines, Football Manager, Kel May, they've been up with us, they've been down with us twice. And that relationship's really strong. And just one of our partners in the last month, it's not fair to name who, have come to us with a problem. And a lot of clubs would have tried to kick him out because of it. But we've worked with him. We've worked on a solution. And only about half an hour before his call, I was able to email them to say, look, this is how we're going to support you. So it's a two-way thing. And that's why we call it partnership rather than sponsorship, because sponsorship sounds a bit crass. It sounds like you sell your rights and you don't really help out. But this is a pure partnership. So I guess a strategy, and it's not exactly groundbreaking here, but it is to be open, to be honest, and to work with partners. And I've often believed that people buy off people. So you need to be, especially when you're selling multi-million pound sponsorship, you need to like the people you're buying off, I believe. And in a way, you need to like the people who are buying off you as well, because it makes for a better relationship and having those relationships. And going back to another front of shirt, Stake, we signed them in 2021. Australia was still in, based in Euro, based in Melbourne. And Melbourne was a no-go area for us, so we couldn't go over there and do a deal. And that was probably one of the most difficult deals I did in my own head, because I couldn't sit with them, look into her eyes, and then have a beer with them afterwards, or go for a social afterwards. It was all on Zoom, and it was all ridiculously early in the morning for us and late in the evening for them. And that was probably, in a way, it was an easy deal because it all come together nicely. But that was the hardest one for me to get my head around, because I didn't feel like I had that connection with them. Now, luckily, over the years, we built that connection with them. But yeah, doing it over Zoom, I wouldn't ever recommend doing a big deal like that without meeting people.
Well, you know, Paul, you mentioned probably the golden word, you know, in the business that you and I are in. And I think, it's relationships, and, you know, whether it's, you know, and relationships allow you to have, you know, the hard conversations, because at the end of the day, you understand sometimes where, you know, you've got to come back to a client and ask for more. You've got to come back and maybe ask a client for, you're redefining a category. And if you don't have that, you know, rapport, you know, if it's just a transactional deal, you know, those conversations can get hard. They can get nasty. They can get difficult when you have promotion and relegation. Hey, we're going up. The price just tripled. You know, we're going down. You know, the assets are changing. You know, so it's one of the things that I talk about when I'm teaching our grad students, and in that year of COVID, I went from teaching a class of 30 students in a lecture hall to having them all on Zoom. So it was my first experience of going from, you know, in person to 30 people staring at me and trying to herd those cats and keep them interested. But probably nothing more daunting than the situation you described of getting all of your partners on a Zoom call, and probably having, you know, like you said, a rehearsed conversation, but one that could have gone way off the rails had the folks at Sportsbet not stepped up and said, hey, you know, it's when you've got the biggest partner in your organization, the front of your kit, you know, coming out saying, we're all here, we're not going anywhere, we're all in this. It sets a tone, and it goes back to, look, there's, you know, you had great relationships with those, with that partner. I would think maybe he had already had that with his staff at some point, you know, people probably wondering if their jobs are going away and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes, having a partner that really diffused a very, you know, potentially volatile situation is something that, whether you realized it or not, you laid that groundwork in the years of working together and building a partnership where he's like, you know, sure, Paul could have a real bad day here. If this goes wrong, I'm going to step up and make sure he knows we're with him. Because if we're with him, everybody else, you know, tends to fall in line a little bit. And like you said, there was probably one or two or maybe three on that call that were, you know, probably had some questions to ask that would have been difficult. Maybe they were going to look for money back or look for make goods down the road, all those kind of stuff. And, you know, put on their negotiator's hat and see what you were going to do for them to make it right. And you and I have been in those conversations throughout our career as well, but that wasn't the time or the place. And your lead partner stepped up and made that. And again, I would imagine that there's, you know, conversations like that, or I would say you probably had a conversation long after that call where you maybe pulled him aside and said, you remember that Zoom call? I can't thank you enough for just being the voice that stepped up and probably, made the road we all traveled together the months after that a lot easier, because we knew you were with us, you know, whether it was choreographed or not. Relationships in this business are critical. And, again, talking about you know, how things change, quickly. You know, as you go up, you go down, and just in general in the game of sport, you know, you know this year, you know, you're staying in the championship, and now you've got a club like Leeds coming down, and Leeds going through not just the relegation, their roster's transforming with players, you know, some of their key players. Obviously, they had a lot of U.S. players that are, you know, so a team we watch. Obviously, ownership now fully, you know, majority ownership by the 49ers organization, watching players get moved. Talk a little bit about, you know, that side of it. I mean, there's a sponsorship side of this, but, you know, tell our audience a little bit. When you're up, and you know you've got more quid to build out your roster, but when you come down, you tend to lose some players, you know, because players at certain levels, you know, want to play in the highest league. Conversations with sponsors around, you know, player transactions. Again, you don't directly control that in your role, but you and I both know that. You know, if you sign a great player, or have, you know, or lose three or four great, you know, players in a transition, you know, sometimes sponsors tend to follow them. You know, tell us a little bit about, you know, that role, because it's, you know, obviously something you don't control, but something that does affect, you know, at the end of the day, your job, and as you mentioned, you know, values and things of that nature.
So you mentioned Wrexham earlier, because I was thinking, we was having a conversation with somebody the other day, that people, we had a goalkeeper here actually played for Wrexham last season, Ben Foster, from nowhere, he's cycling GK, just went absolutely phenomenal. And then we had a call once with a brand who all they wanted was Ben. That's all they wanted. And they didn't, we were pitching them the assets. They just wanted Ben. And it came very, very clear to me that they needed a relationship with him. So we ended up putting him in touch, in direct touch from there, because we knew Ben wasn't going to be here towards the end of the season. So we knew we'd then lose a sponsor from there. That's the only time that's ever happened to me here, that it's been about one person. And I imagine with Wrexham, how you protect the owners is IP, because let's face it, that's the USP about Wrexham at the minute. It's a fantastic story and fantastic documentary, two great owners. But I imagine when you're doing those sponsorship conversations or partnership conversations, you're having to protect Rob and Ryan. They're just not going to be flogged off to go and open stores and go from there. One thing I would say is it doesn't need to be a great player to turn the needle. It can be a player from a country which, so for example, there's a club in Spain who had a Chinese player, and the amount of sponsorship they got was phenomenal. And when he came on a free transfer afterwards, I was trying to convince people up in our player recruitment team to have a look at him, because that would have, he probably wouldn't have even got in our first team at the time, but wow, would it have brought some commercial support for us. So yeah, Someone from China, somebody from South Korea, the first Indian player to smash it in soccer in this league, the brands, and we're talking a lot about partnership here, but it's not all about partnership. You look at what Zlatan was playing, even when he went to LA, the amount of people following him there to watch him. So, but that's a great play, but it doesn't need to be a great play. But commercially, if it's from a country where the fans follow, it can really move the needle. And we had a Mexican back in 2016, didn't stay with us long, 2015, sorry. And you saw this spike from Mexico in social media, and then this drop off after he went was like a cliff. So yeah, I think to answer your question, yeah, we'd love to have more people like that, but there is reason why our player recruitment team pick the players they do, and it's all about it's normally about the feet. So we try and educate them of, well, if you sign this player, that would really help us commercially, and this will be your ROI here, and this is how much the merchandise will be, and the partnerships could be, and the GAs, extra GAs from there.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced that in baseball, representing the Dodgers. You know, they were very big in Asia, signing Korean players, and all of a sudden you had an entire, your rotational, signage, an outfield wall signage. All of a sudden you had five or six Korean companies all just dumping, six, seven figure deals on you because you had their top player. Obviously we're seeing that now with Shohei Ohtani with the Angels. They're getting all the Japanese revenue, much like Seattle did when they had Ichiro. One of those trends that we followed and watched was watching some of these ownership changes, and as someone who you haven't gone through an ownership change recently, but you're kind of sitting there watching some of these transactions that have happened within the Premier League, and obviously we're seeing some of the sovereign wealth funds coming in. Some of them have been bidding. We've got a client that bid for Manchester United and didn't win it, or didn't get into the final group. Curious, just as again, you've got a pretty good seat to watch those. You're seeing a new kit partner now on Newcastle. And it's not a company that you'd be able to pick up the phone and go, hey, take a look at European soccer, take a look at the soccer here in the UK, EPL championship. Just kind of curious, as you watch ownership shift change, obviously the change in Leeds is going to be very interesting. We're a little bit, we're very close to that as well. Just curious, as you watch some of these changes, does it present an opportunity for you to, there's a kit partner that's going off Newcastle. Is that someone that, perhaps, finds its way to a club like yours, when they're pushed out, because of an ownership change? Or
yeah, you'd like to think so. It hasn't really worked out yet. You control the controllables, and the people who have come into Newcastle, and I was in Abu Dhabi a few months back, and you look at some of the companies around there and you think, I'd love to engage with these people. But when they own a club, or many clubs in Abu Dhabi's case, in Manchester City's case, there's very little chance that we are going to be able to get in and really being taken seriously there when, let's face it, we're not in the elite league at the moment. So we try different things from there. We try not to go after the established countries now. We have, and we've had success, and I think we're into year six of American Airlines partnership now, but we've tried to do a lot of work in India, and we've partnered with an Indian club in Odisha, and that's brought some revenue opportunities alongside it as well, some organic growth from there. So we try and do things differently, but in a way you could look at it, and I never really thought about it this way, and be quite envious of suddenly Newcastle have got a great opportunity to get into Saudi and to the brands in Saudi, but we don't have that opportunity as much, so we try and create that opportunities for ourselves. And I've never really looked at it as that, but we have to work harder. But then you look at, talk to people at Newcastle and Man City, I'm damn sure they work bloody hard themselves. And they've got difficult numbers to hit as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's more of, you know, I would say it's something where you're envious of, like, oh, that's an easy deal to have. I mean, I know we talked about, with Wrexham, for example, the United deal. I call United a lot on things that are a lot bigger than Wrexham, and to see, and everybody's like, wow, what a great deal, what a great negotiated deal. And like, I think we all know, you know, speaking candidly, that deal wasn't done because all of a sudden United said, hey, I really want to get into a fourth division EFL club and be on the front of their kit. They're on the front of that kit because of a TV show, you know, two globally recognized owners, you know, a story that's, a great story. But when you look at it, and I think the conversation for us is that, you know, I appreciate the Luton Town story much better than Wrexham. I love the Wrexham story, but the Wrexham story is a story that was bought and paid for. Much like Man City is they've had a great run and Pep's a fantastic manager. They've got unlimited resources. You know, Wrexham had more resources than anybody in the National League. One of our clients, you know, is our friend up there at the Hive in Barnet. He doesn't spend like Rob and Ryan do. He didn't go out and get Ben Foster when they needed to have a keeper. He didn't go out and buy, you know, Paul Mullen. I look at it in one way and go, it's a great story, you know, and you see these deals, and so then you as a sponsorship manager, commercial director, to see a brand come in and set a number, and then your ownership goes, well, such and such just got X for their kit deal, and I'm like, dude, that wasn't a real deal, that's an in-house deal that hard for me to use that as a comp, you know, when selling. And I know you have a sister club in Italy, and so you've got some abilities to kind of have conversations maybe with Italian brands and, you know, that want to get in Italy, and, you know, and vice versa. Some of your clients may want to, you know, have a presence in Serie A. I just talking about it in that way. I know that, you have a perspective of living in it. I know that, we deal with it from afar, but, just kind of a, you know, more of an observation for me, you know, knowing that, seeing some of those deals, come in and, you know, how does, you know, how does it, you know, again, does, how does it affect some of your strategy? How does it, what are some of your partners kind of look at it and go, oh, that's a interesting deal.
I think, so just going back to Wrexham, one of the really interesting stories last season was actually on there, who went up as well, was Notts County. So Notts County is the oldest league club in the world. Due to a number of reasons, found themselves down into the National League and managed to get 107 points last season and still come second. But the fact they got up with them, despite, and they were just an irritant to Wrexham all the way through, and where Wrexham had the money, with the greatest respect, and I'm not saying money wins, you don't...
No, not always.
Throwing money at stuff doesn't mean you still need that philosophy, and that's it. That's what you have to take your hat off to Man City and the philosophy throughout that club is, and now the culture and everything, it's been fantastic. But what Notts County did last season on a fraction of Wrexham's budget was phenomenal because they were on their coattails all the time. It'll be interesting to see if that rivalry stays in League Two and maybe up from there, because I think Notts County, with their owners who are doing things differently, they're doing it on a much more data way, is a really, really intriguing story. So to answer your question, which I can't remember, about Italian, our sister club in Italy, we work together for economies of scale, sharing best practice. We've never, and we've tried really hard, been able to get that one deal, one club deal across both parties. Just has never happened. And it's a shame, really, because we've tried, both parties have tried really hard at that minute. And we've got one lead in the fire at the moment, one iron in the fire, sorry, where it could be that one. But yeah, that's one thing I'd like to, when I leave here, like to have left that legacy, that we have a couple of tier sponsors between both clubs. It's just never been able to land that deal at the right time. We've been close, though. We've been very close.
Do you think, and what are some, what would be some of the reasons for that? I mean, is that an easier conversation as an EPL club and a Serie A club?
I think there's so much variance either way. When we're an EPL club, we are considerably higher than in value than Udinese. And when we're an EFL club, a championship, we are considerably lower. And I think that variance is so big from there. I just think for us, we seem to be talking to people who do not have interest in Italy, and as much interest in Serie A as they need to get, because it's a bit expensive. The partnership's expensive to do. But yeah, we would, as I say, it's a legacy piece of mine. I'd like to be able to do that. And at the minute, we're working on Udinese's front shirt and naming rights for the stadium. So we are, that's something which I need to speak to you about, Rob, actually. Going back to your point about brands, though, which we touched on earlier, we have Manscaped as a partner. Now, Manscaped, I'm speaking for them here. The reason they like us is because we will go above and beyond on the content pieces. They're not really that interested in LED and splashing their name everywhere. It's for them, it's content pieces. And trust me, they will push boundaries in the...
I know.
Yeah, and we like that. We like pushing boundaries. And there's... I'm not calling us a media company, but we should think of ourselves as a media company at times, because we've got 5 million on social media. We have 400,000 people coming to our stadium combined all year. So... We should look at ourselves as a media company. I don't like to refer to us as that, but we can work with Manscaped on that rather than just your bog standard content things. We like to push for boundaries. And trust me, we've done some things with Manscaped which were close to boundaries. And we've come up with ideas which they've said, no, that's too much, and vice versa as well. So we like to test ourselves on that as well.
Some might say they're a ballsy company. They're good friends of mine, and I love that brand, I love their creative, their creativity around their brand, how they position it, we've had some very fun conversations with them about some opportunities here in the U.S. and some of the other markets that they're looking at globally, and I guess I'll, on behalf of Lucas and Ryan, I just want to make sure that you are a customer, that you have sampled, the lawnmower 4.0.
Where are we going with this? Do you want me to save up my holiday plans?
It's one of those, I say that, a Watford is a great opportunity. Again, the attitude of a club like Watford, embraces I won't call them a challenger brand. I mean, obviously you've got Gillette that plays in the space, but I think Manscaped, really pushed men's grooming in that way to the forefront because of their approach. At some point, men's grooming was literally just, shaving your face. and more, well, more generational consumer today is full body grooming. You know, it is what it is. And they kind of took it and said, hey, we're going to have a lot of fun with it. You know, their partnerships here in the U.S. so on the collegiate level are with Ball State and with the South Carolina Gamecocks. They have a lot of fun with innuendos around that. They have a lot of fun with their bathroom advertising that they do, you know, taking up, you know, their takeover of men's restrooms, booths, WCs, if you will, for the international customers that are on our podcast today. But, but I don't think you could get away with that working with the Yankees or going up and doing a Manchester United. Because I think, you know, from a brand standpoint, they would be almost too, they would take themselves too seriously in some of the ideas that a brand like that likes to push. And I think, you know, Watford's like, hey, we're all in. Let's have some fun with this, you know, getting your players engaged, you know, because I know that's, you know, a key part of you know, having, you know, player involvement around the brand. So that's one of those deals in a category and a company that I, you know, I'm watching them diversify, you know, getting into other spaces that, you know, I'm odd. They now have a beard grooming product. So, you know, they've moved above the waist on some of their product lines. So, you know, we may have to get this podcast sponsored by them here eventually, you know, just as an idea. But that's a brand that I have a lot that I have a lot of respect for, and I, you know, was very pleased to see when they did do some international deals that our friends at Watford were benefactors of that. So they're excited to see that, and they've just launched with a club in Germany, and so they're growing.
And actually, you mentioned about the podcast sponsorship. Every podcast I listened to at the time was sponsored by Manscaped. And it was actually now every podcast I listen to seems to be sponsored by, or have been listened to, seems to be sponsored by BetterHelp. So I must now get in touch with those, because those guys are.
They're coming, right? Follow the trend.
Yeah, so that's what we need to get our ideas there. So no, absolutely, and people like that, we've got ACES as partners as well, and we're trying to do much more. We're trying to, from what we learned from Manscaped, bring it into other brands as well. And I love that. I love the content part of it. It's just because you get the traditional assets. So it doesn't mean we stop there. We really try and push hard on the partnership, on the content side of the partnerships.
Awesome. So we've spoken about partnerships, merchandise, sponsorships. One last part in the relegation zone. How do you guys see the impact on your season ticket sales and your merchandise sales?
Well, actually, just a bit of a background at Watford, maybe I should have started at this. We're a town of 100,000 people. So most of the time when we were in the Premier League, there was only two towns in the Premier League. It was us and Burnley. Probably the same next season with Luton and Burnley. We have got a 20,000-seater stadium. We sell around, in the Premier League, we're selling around 14,500 season tickets. I think we'll be on track this season to sell about 13.7. So actually the churn's about 800, which percentage-wise between them isn't that bad at all. And you look at a lot of clubs who go down, and especially at second season of being down, you see that drop-off, hugely problematic. And we haven't seen that this year. This is now our second season down. You haven't seen that over. Merchandise sales is record-breaking last season. I think Kelme, our kit supplier, has really helped that, really helped ramp it up. So those two areas actually are not as much problematic. The bigger areas, partnerships, obviously, I've explained, from close to 17 million to 3.5-4 million. Hospitality's hard because we're on London's doorstep here. We're not a London club. A lot of people would call us a London club, but we're just outside. But when we were selling hospitality, we were going into London corporate companies. We were going into big law firms, big accountancy firms, and selling Watford as, sounding crass here, the easiest place in London to get in and out of, because you go and you go to Tottenham, you're coming out a week later. That's actually not, obviously not true, yeah. Not literal, but it's not the easiest to get in and out of. We, in 2019, won Best Hospitality in the Premier League. Our hospitality is exceedingly good. The problem is, when we got relegated both times, first time a little bit diluted because of COVID, the second time in particular, you lose all these companies because they're not there to see the Watford players. They're there to see now the Haalands of this world and De Bruyne's and just... For some reason, my mind's gone blank of other Premier League stars, but all of the Premier League stars, you noticed it as well, that how excited people got when Harry Kane's just in front of them, or Son or something like that. They're not there to see Watford. Now, what you can do with that is make them, because they're seeing Watford 20 times a year or 90 times a year in the Premier League, you can get them into what as Watford as their second team or first team, and then hopefully they'll come back. But a lot of these companies weren't the same people coming week in, week out. They were inviting all of their guests and stuff. That's where it's been a bit of a drop-off. And it's a shame. It's a very difficult way around it. And because, obviously, food inflation around the world is bad, in this country, we have something called Brexit, which, obviously, I'm not going into politics, but it's been... horrendous on him, one of the horrendous reasons for inflation, but a few other reasons as well. But that means our price point, where we've been trying to bring our price for hospitality down because we're not in the Premier League, we're getting this humongous rise, like the biggest rise since 1970s here. So you're getting this humongous rise from there, going down from there. We're also having labour rise. We're having... we're trying to pay our minimum wages is all gone up, and rightly so as well. So the costs are going up while the price is going down, which is just bonkers. No other industry would be doing that. No one else is bringing them down. And having four young children, I know how much eating out and just your weekly shop has gone up so much in this over here. But we're bringing our prices down, which is head scratching. You can't understand that, but the reason being is because we're not in the Premier League. And that's why when we're talking about relegation, you can say all of these things about your phone not working, but you're also making illogical decisions like bringing prices down while costs are going up because you haven't got that flair of the Premier League. We don't have Tottenham, Man City, Chelsea coming to us this season. We do have, you have 23 teams, and the EFL Championship is one of the most competitive leagues in the world. It's a great league. I love it. I grew up watching us in this league. I love it to pieces. But it's difficult, and you have to make illogical decisions because of it.
Wow. Very, very interesting. So you're defying logic, you're working against the grain, and you know, it's tough. It's tougher than ever.
Yeah, and luckily on that, we have a catering partner in Levy who have been so good to us in the fact that they haven't been regimented at all. And we say to all of our partners about working fluidly and nothing can be rigid. And Levy have really picked it up and run with that as how fluid we can keep our relationship, because we do tweak things a lot and I do tweak things a lot from there. Have I just lost you? Because my computer's just done something
very strange. No, we're here.
We're here.
It's just locked me out. But yeah. So we're very lucky as well. But that goes back to my original point about keeping those relationships tight from the very start and keeping them transparent, keeping them friendly from there. And I'm really sorry to say this. They're trying to chuck me out of my meeting room here because I've booked it till 4 o'clock. Problem is, I've been at this stadium, being at the training ground now, we're a short amount of meeting room. So if some people burst in, that's why.
Yeah. Well, timing's good, Paul, because you know, I think we probably slotted you for an hour, and you know, it's great to get insight, you know, about, you know, someone actually sitting in the seat, you know, because. Ahmad and I will talk about, you know, issues going on and deals going down. And, you know, we're talking, you know, talking from the outside. So, you know, we appreciate you taking some time and kind of, you know, peeling back the curtain a little bit and opening, you know, opening up some of our, you know, our audience to, you know, what it's like, you know, sitting in the seat, you know, as a commercial director for a professional club there in the UK and one that deals with some of the challenges that we read about in the business, also, you know, has had some success and doing, you know, big deals and, you know, groundbreaking deals. You know, first club to actually put, you know, crypto on a kit, you know, when you guys put Bitcoin on the sleeve you know, sports bet, you know, was a big deal. And obviously when Stake came on, you know, to replace them, you know, I mean, you've had some great successes and dealt with some, you know, some massive challenges as well. So appreciate you peeling back the curtain here a little bit and letting us in.
Yeah, but I think we need a follow-up. I think both of you need to come to a UK, come to a game. We'll do it in person after a game. You can see it from there, see it all in action. So, yeah, let's do a follow-up.
We're coming. There's no doubt about that. I've threatened that for numerous years, but Thomas and I will certainly come over. We'll drag him out as well and, you know, have some, you know, spend some time over there in the UK and spend some time with you and your team. Because, you know, I still have my kit. You know, I still have mine.
I need to get you more.
I got to get me an updated one. I like that third kit.
I've got a new one coming out.
So
just to add, and I don't want you blushing here, but in Rob and Thomas, probably two of the best people I've ever worked with there. Just very authentic, very genuine, very organic. And I love working you, Rob. So, yeah, let's make sure we get that drink in, which I've known you a long time and never met you, which is always strange.
I know. So, we will definitely do that. You know, sooner than later, my friend.
Yeah, and because Thomas isn't on the call, we haven't gone on to politics, which normally I get dragged into your politics. So, yeah.
You know those Texans. It's... You know, they got to get their politics in. But, you know, look, sports and politics, you know, find themselves, you know, strange bedfellows sometimes. But, you know, look, you know, today's, you know, discussion was really kind of getting in, you know, getting into the seat of a commercial director. And again, Paul, you're gracious for your time. And I know that, like you said, you guys are kicking right back into the full scale. The summer's over, you know. The calendar turned, and you know, it's before you know it, your boys are going to be back on the pitch, and you know, the quest for promotion, you know, will once again renew. So you know, we personally root for you. I know that you probably picked up a few more fans in Australia, and from our podcast are going to now, you know, tune in to the Hornets matches and see how they do this coming year as well. So, you know, we look forward to it and wish you nothing but the best. And like I said, we'll be in touch soon. I'll reach out here this week and we'll get some time on the calendar to chat about some of those Italian issues you're having.
No issues. They're just, you can just help solve the gap there. No, I've really enjoyed it, guys, and it hasn't felt like an interview. It's felt like a chat. So let's do it in person next time. We're on some sofas and stuff like that.
All right. That's great. Appreciate it, my friend. Guys. All right. Take care, Paul.
Thank you,
yeah.
See you. See you later, mate. Goodbye.
Good stuff, mate.